1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Bob Green, the CEO of a company, and the guy is in the he's in the head, and he's like responding to graffiti with the arrow. How many times have you seen that? You go into the bathroom and you want to wash your hands and perhaps perform your ablutions. And there it is, right there in front of you, the arrow, and somebody else pointing. And there's Bobby. He takes out his felt pen and he writes his stuff down. It's pretty sick. You know, where I grew up, I had running right behind our house was a railroad track. And for some reason, as kids, you know, you're always drawn to railroad tracks. So we're walking on a track and there is a trestle, one of those train bridges over a boulevard, and we walked down the middle of this track, and on the inside of the trestle was some of the most vile stuff you ever read in your life. You know, it's spray painted or written on there. Now, when you're 11, you believe it all. So I'm looking at this, and it says, if you want the greatest blankety blank blank, call this number now. It's my girlfriend, and she doesn't mind. You know? So I'm 13. Wow, this is great. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, you know? I think I even wrote down one of the numbers. But thank God, I was born dumb, man, but it wasn't at night. And I, for some reason, the good Lord kept me safe, man. I did the dumbest stuff. You know, there used to be a time when you hitchhiked everywhere. You don't see kids hitchhiking anymore, but I used to hitchhike everywhere. I didn't have a car, and I didn't want to be around my house because it wasn't a particularly happy home, so I was out hitchhiking. I mean, I'm 14 or 15 years old. I'm standing on a street. I got my thumb out. I'm getting into a car with a stranger, and I guess my thinking was, you know, everybody's kind of cool because it was the day when it's all just, you know, chill. And I remember a guy, I get into the car, one guy going, and it's like, what's that, there's this really cool movie called Rapture. Mimi Rogers picks up this really great actor, forget his name, the blonde who, is the blonde guy, I'll get his name. She picks him up hitchhiking and he says, boy, nobody ever picks me up. You got a lot of guts picking me up. Man, I'll tell you, if I was me, I wouldn't pick me up. In fact, I know if I was me and I saw me hitchhiking, I wouldn't pick me up. And then he says, however, if I was me, I would go to bed with me. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. If I was me and I saw me, I would go to bed with me. Guy's nuts. So you get picked up. These people give you a ride. This one guy is, how you doing today? Real good. I'm just going up here to such and such street. Yeah, huh? See this dashboard? Yeah. This guy says to me, under here is 1,500 pounds of dynamite. Anybody even tries anything with me, I'll blow this car to hell and back. Me and the guy riding with me. And I thought, not then, but in later years as I thought back, it must have been like some warning. 1,500 pounds of dynamite, you know. And then the really pathetic thing where you get the ride, and you never get a ride with a hot chick. Well, one time a stripper picked me up, really nice lady. She was going down to work some bar in Rosemead. And I remember looking at her thinking, wow, you were the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. And she was really nice to me. And she's, how old are you? I'm 16. And, you know, I'm just going down here to the beach and everything. Okay, well, I get off work at 4. And when I come out, I see you, I'll pick you up. I'll give you right back up to Arcadia. Oh, gee, thanks a lot, ma'am. He goes, oh, that's okay. You know, I have a kid brother, you know. And as she left there, I could smell her perfume. And just that evening, of course, there was a little deposit in the spank bank. Now, anyway, then I got a ride to this guy, and it's really the pathetic one, too, where you get a ride, and he's this little man, and we're driving along, and his car comes to a real stop, so I put my hand down to stop papers that were on the seat from sliding off, and he put his hand down on top of mine. And I'm like, okay. So then I said, I'm getting out here, and he goes, in just this most pathetic voice, he says, do you want to stay with me? And I said, no, I'm just this kid. I go, oh, no, I'm just getting out right here. Thank you. And other people, just very weird, very. And you wonder if you're hitchhiking around as a kid, not as a boy, so maybe it's a little different, but how the hell I survived that? I mean, you know, every day you're reading about some kid getting killed. I did that, and not once did I have a problem. You know, like the time I was hitchhiking through San Francisco, I get picked up by this guy. He's a professor of psychology at the College of Marin. Now, this is back in the days when nobody had video equipment, but in the backseat of his car, he had a huge Sony recording camera, and he was a kind of long-haired freak. And he says to me, "You got a place to stay tonight, man?" I said, "Not really." He says, "Well, my old lady and me and my kids live right up here. You want to come up, man? We'll give you some dinner and all this stuff." This is real hippie stuff, right? And, of course, now, yeah, sure. So I go up there, and for the next 12 hours, I was with this family like you ain't never seen before in your life. First of all, this guy has got the video camera out, and after we eat his wife's beef bourguignon, that's what she made, oh, the beef stroganoff, then everybody started drinking and doing other things. Now, the son, who's about my age, is completely bald, no eyebrows, no hair, except at the very top of his head, a huge shock of hair that he let grow straight up. And he's, like, way out there. Now they say, "You get the camera, and we're going to do a skit where I'm going to come home drunk and my wife shoots me. Phil, that boot, you bang it on the floor." She comes out with a gun. I don't know these people. I've known them for 2 hours. I'm in the middle of this freaking zoo. And they proceed to videotape this bit where he's walking in the door drunk with an empty bottle of Jim Beam. She yells at him. She points the gun at him. I hit the boot on the floor like the gunshot. He falls, and everybody's just, ah! So that morning, they said, "Yeah, you could crash on the couch." Well, thank you. About 4 a.m., I got up. I quietly packed my stuff, and I just slipped right out the door, on down to the highway. I got a million stories like that, which I will not go into, but it's amazing. And you don't see kids hitchhiking today? Man, it's a good thing. It's only a good thing, believe me. Because for the life of me, I don't know how the hell it is I'm sitting here with the possibility of every kind of freak. But then ever occasionally, they're like a really interesting, some guy picked me up. I was hitchhiking up north. This dude was going up to work on the pipeline in Alaska, and he was just a regular guy. And he had pillows in the back. He says, "So where are you going?" "I'm going up and I'm working on the Alaska pipeline," when they were laying the pipeline in the 70s. "Yeah, you eat at truck stops, kid. That's for number one." Oh, and another pathetic story. This truck driver picks me up. He goes, "You need a place to stay for the night?" I go, "Yeah." For all I knew, this guy was, say, Chicken Hawk. You know, he's going to, like, hold me in bondage and make, you know, nasty porn tapes, porn torture tapes, like gay torture with me or something. He's living in a motel with his wife and his two kids that are not his. He's the stepdad. Okay? He's got this truck. It's like a 2-ton truck. He says, "Come on, man, we got room." They didn't have any room, man. It's one motel room, two little kids, the wife, and him. And the little boy was a bedwetter, and he said, "Yeah, well, you know what happens when you wet your bed. I'll beat hell out of you again," right? So he's, like, beating up this kid that's not even his. And why did I stay there? I don't know. So he splits because he's got to go to the job, and the wife says, "Would you like to go get dinner with me and the boys?" I go, "Okay." So we go, and for the next, like, hour and a half, she's preaching Jesus to me with these two little kids with, like, spaghetti sauce on them, and I'm so scared. No, she started doing a whole Jesus rap. Meanwhile, what she didn't know, when this guy originally picked me up, was taking me up the road, he's trying to hit on every chick.
"Did you have tuna fish?"
Don't wave at me like that, bud.
"Did you have tuna fish?"
Why did I have tuna fish?
Because she's a Jesus freak.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, you know what I'm saying, don't you?
No, I don't know what you're saying.
The husband wasn't home. You were with her.
Why, you filthy-minded...
Not the face, Phil. I have a photo shoot in the morning. Oh!
All right, that's the end of that. Pathetic. Sick and weird. In other words, my life. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
There's an email from San Diego, and it says it's from Tristan. Is that a guy's name? Okay. Both?
Yeah, I know a girl once.
Oh, shut up, bud. I don't even want to talk to you, man. Not since that comment about my, pencil-sized you-know-what. All right. Phil, just to give you the latest from your fans down here at the University of California, San Diego, we've invented a Fillmore Middle drinking game. That's pretty cool. If the show has a studio audience and or a laugh track, then whenever one of your lines gets a laugh, bomb, we do a shot. Please consider visiting us in the hospital if your show's a winner. Cheers, Tristan. Where are they, man? What do they mean, the hospital?
They owe
Oh, because they're going to OD. Yeah, true. Well, that's cool. So every time a line that I say gets a laugh, you guys will do a shot. Cool. Fillmore Middle on the NBC schedule. Very happy and very proud to be a part of that show. And it'll be a mid-season pickup. And the star is Justin Bartha, along with Sarah Alexander. Sarah's going to be a big star. And Kali Roca, she's going to be a big star. And Matt Winston, he's already a big star. And Dion Richman, he is and will always be a big star. Dion was in the Cosby Show. And Grant Rosenmeier, huge star. Cut your throat for a farthing, but a huge star. And, boy, if I'm missing somebody, somebody's going to cut my throat. Oh, and Phil Hendry, a nice guy. Not much of a star, but a nice guy. Here's another email. This is from Debara. Backstage pass. My life was at an all-time low. Then one day I found the Phil Hendry show. So I bought myself a backstage pass. Now I walk funny because I got no ass. Parentheses. I laughed it off, but I didn't know how to rhyme that line. Get out of here. We also have this email from somebody named Chris Mong. The last few days you've been talking a lot about Disneyland, and it got me thinking about an idea for the show, so here goes. While in Disneyland, Jay Sanos and Major Elvis Newton find it necessary to take Lloyd Bonafide down in a three-step takedown. In the melee, Lloyd knocks the head off of Dale from Chip and Dale. When Lloyd sees that there is a bowl haircut in the costume, he has war flashbacks and nightmares and brings a lawsuit against the Citizens Auxiliary Police and Disney. Congratulations on the TV show, Chris. A bull haircut in the Chris and Chip and Dale outfit. Here's one from a cat named Chris Petty. He writes, Phil, listening live tonight via your website, I live in Newfoundland, Eastern Canada, and have been a huge fan for at least 2 years. I got the backstage pass in April, and it's worth it. It's going to take years to get through all the stuff you've packed on there. It's worth the bread. The Newfoundland Catholic Church have been up to their necks with abuse scandals for many years now, and many of the priests and Christian brothers are in jail. Because of this, Father McWhorter is probably my favorite character. What kind of a weird line of reasoning is that? There are a great many priests in jail. Because of that, Father McWhorter's. And it's refreshing to hear him give it back. If you ever need material for the old country priest, just do a Google search for Mount Cashel. It was an orphanage operated by the Christian Brothers here in St. John's. Say no more. Thanks. St. John's, Newfoundland, Eastern Canada. Wow, that's way out there, ain't it, bud?
It's way out in the Siberia.
Well, it ain't Siberia, but it's way on the, it's on the edge, man. What's out there anyway? Man, just ice and just like... Well, I got a nor'easter coming in, huh, Bob? Yeah, that's right, Dale. Where are you driving? I think I'll go into Halifax today, okay? Get some tickets for the hockey game. And everybody digs it, you know, they all love it. Like when I lived in Minnesota, they're just, isn't this great? It's 100 below. No, it ain't great. And the cat, this is the excuse they give. They say this, you know, it takes a real man to live here. Wait a minute, man, what you're missing is something very basic. Nobody wants to live here. Do you understand? See, we're so special here in Minnesota that it takes, you know, not everybody can live here. We're very special. It's a, no, not everybody wants to live there. Don't you understand? No one wants to go there. No one wants to freeze their ass off. Realizing, of course, we're on KSTP in Minneapolis on Saturday nights. But anyway, it's a great place, but it's cold, Jim. And when you're landing in an airplane from Miami Beach, which is, I did that one time. I'm coming in from Miami. I'm coming in from the land of turquoise water. Fine-looking Latin women. Couple of hot-looking redneck chicks, too. All them Fort Lauderdale strip bars, South Beach, Joe Stone Crab, South, you know, it's just a beautiful. And now I'm flying back into Minnesota. Nothing wrong with that. But when I hear the guy say,
at least, Joe, this is your captain speaking. We're about probably 20 minutes outside St. Paul, Mass. Airport. Oh, temperature on the ground right now, 10 below. Oh, I'll let you know as soon as we get the gate.
And I'm thinking, oh, 10 below. And then I realize I don't have a coat. I don't have a jacket, man. I thought I was flying to Miami, so I don't need a jacket in Miami, so I didn't take one. Now I'm flying back to Minnesota. I got no jacket. It's 10 below. 10 freaking below. Now, what do you do when it's 10 below and you have no coat? And you're landing at 11 o'clock at night, so there's no stores open in the airport. There's no men's shop in the airport. What did I do? I got to the edge of the heated airport, and I looked out down into the black asphalt parking lot. I knew where my car was. It was right straight ahead, about 300 yards. I knew as soon as that door opened, it's 10 below. It's like, as soon as I opened the door, I ran for it. I'm running. It's cold. Oh, it's cold. It's cold. Oh, God, it's cold. Now I'm into the car. You know, I've got, get the key out. You know how you curse yourself? Come on, you idiot. Come on, you stupid, rotten. You know, you're talking to yourself. I mean, don't you have any self-love here? Oh, shut up. You idiot. Why did you take a goat? You are so stupid. Oh, I hate you. I hate you. Oh, came in the car. No, so you open the door and you get in. Now, there's nothing colder than an unheated car on God's earth. There's nothing colder than sitting in an unheated car. You ever get out to the car in the morning and you first get in and it's leather seats? Thanks a lot. You know, in February, I'm going to curse your name. Oh, to hell with it, Mr. Hendry. You're going to love the car, huh? Leather seats, huh? You love the leather? Yeah, so feel it, huh? Isn't that nice? Just like a beautiful woman's rear end, huh? Yeah, okay, man, it's going to be cool when I'm getting up at 6 a.m. to take my daughter to school, huh? Oh, get out of here. Blow it out your rear end. Come on, just sign on the dotted line. So I'm in a car, and I started up. Now, in that kind of weather, and you've got a car, at that point, my Chevy Blazer was 9 years old. No, it was 1993. It was 8 years old. It takes a while to get the heater going. I turn the heater up full blast, and I'm in there just, come on, baby, come on, heat up, baby. And it finally gets going. And I'm like, okay, freak, I made it, man. Now I back out. Well, the other thing that happens in that kind of weather is the air in your tires is cold. So your tires aren't flat, but it feels like they're flat for a while until the rubber heats up and the air inside the tire heats up, literally. So you're driving along, the freaking tire's flat? Now, can you imagine that? You're living in a place that's so freaking cold, the air in your tires are cold. It's cold and it feels... That's just wrong. That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a mortal sin. I'm a Catholic, and I can burn for making a dumb decision like that. Where are you going, Phil? Somewhere where it's so cold, the air in the tires makes it feel like I'm riding on four flats. But the property values are great, man. I'm going to get me a 5-bedroom, 6,000-square-foot, half-acre swimming pool spa that I can use 2 months out of the year. And it's going to cost me 400 G's for this whole setup that would be like a $2 million house in California. And all I have to do is live at the North Pole. You know? And as a result, there are people that living up there from... There's a whole colony of Californians that live up there. There's a few Floridians. I'm telling you the truth. They're so sick to death. And I was at a party one afternoon. And it was like a Super Bowl party at one of these people's houses. It was this California couple that lived in a burb in Minneapolis called Edina. They got a really nice house. They're having a Super Bowl party. I said, so why'd you leave? He goes, we couldn't take it any longer. The whole place is a toilet bowl. All these ex-Californians and these people who used to live in L.A. that have moved speak in the most disparaging way about the city. I mean, you wouldn't believe that they were born and raised here, because when you finally hook up with them in these towns, like, the place is a festering sewer. Man, I'd just as soon crap all over them. And if I ever, ever set foot in that hole again. Wow, dude. I mean, don't call me dude. It reminds me of all those jackballs back there. Where are you from, man? I'm from Miami. But if you ask me that again, I'll slit your throat for a farthing. You'll take it in the neck, friend. Well, dude, I don't want it. Oh, you laid that dude on me again. See, that's all that California stuff. I hate Miami. I hate it. I despise the very warmth of its palm trees and the soft, nurturing nature of its Cuban and Caribbean women. Sure, they were lovely. Sure, they broke my heart. And I left. I left Miami because I fell in love with a Cuban woman. Now you know the truth, all right? She had a beautiful rear end. She had lips like peaches and plums. And then, one day, I came home, and the rear end had expanded to about 6 axe handles across, and that's when I said, okay, I knew it was a lie. A filthy lie. And she said to me, but honey, you know I still give it to you good. Oh, no. I left. I left and I went north. I went so far north, all the women have no butts whatsoever. They're called Eskimos. We'll be right back. Just kidding, ladies. My Eskimo contingent out there. My big fan base among Eskimos. Also, you trappers in the north of Canada. A hearty good evening to you from the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Let's go to, oh, shoot, man. Did we have Larry on the line, bud?
I got him back. I hung up on him.
Why'd you hang up on him?
Because he pissed me off.
Why'd he make you? And don't use that word. I'm the only guy that gets to use the word P-I-S, you know what.
He said that he liked black people.
Get out of here, bud. I don't want to see you again tonight.
I didn't mean it.
Get out of here. Larry, you with us?
Mr. Henry, I'm right here, and whoever that retard is that answers your phone, I got to tell you, you better get with human resources and sort of reevaluate your entire process, because that guy is strictly from hunger.
Well, that was Bud. We also have Harry. Harry's way better. Do an awful lot of writing on politics, but you mentioned today you were profoundly depressed.
I was, and still am, Phil, and I'll tell you why. Today I picked up a recording of a great jazz artist. I'm a lover of jazz music. I don't know if any of the people listening to your broadcast, do you like jazz, Phil?
Very much so.
Well, jazz to me is the greatest music there is. Jazz is not only the greatest music, it is technically perhaps one of the tougher forms of music to master. And what depressed me more than anything else, not because jazz was created by African Americans, but because, it's going to sound crazy, but I'm never going to be black.
Well, that's for sure.
No, well, hear me out.
Okay.
I'm never going in my life to know what it is inside a man that could create that kind of music, because I'm white. African-American people created that kind of music out of their shared experience of brutal deprivation and hardship. And the other thing that African-Americans invented here in America was the idea of hip and cool. In other words, all those phrases, I hear you use the word cat, you know.
Yeah, that's a throwback. It's a jazz thing. I've been using it since I was in high school, but definitely comes from the jazz culture.
Well, that entire culture was created and inspired by the experience of African-Americans in this country. And I guess, and excuse me, I'm a little emotional. I guess I looked in the mirror today and I said, boy, one thing's for sure, you ain't never going to be black, and you'll never, ever be that cool. And I know it sounds...
What do you mean you'll never be that? What is it to be cool?
I think essentially, I don't know what it is to be cool, but one of the coolest things to be is a black person. And
I bet you get some black folks to disagree with that.
Oh, Phil, you don't know. And
well, I mean, I'm not saying that they don't like being black, but I'm saying that you're right, you just said the experience.
I'm telling you that the shared experience of the African American in this country has made him a stronger individual, and I think, Phil, has created an environment where their community can be stronger, and not only that, on top of all of the things they survived, they created the greatest music ever, jazz. They created a thing called hip and cool, which white people now mimic. And all we can do is mimic it. And I was looking at a jazz trio on TV this other weekend. I was watching the jazz. It was two black guys and a white guy. And I thought, boy, the white guy sure looks stupid sitting there playing the drums with these two black guys. He goes,
why?
Because he doesn't belong there. He didn't.
What are you talking? Who was it?
I don't know. It was some white guy playing drums with two really good black jazz players. And
well, look at. If you're saying the man doesn't belong there because he's not black, doesn't that sound racist?
No, you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying he shouldn't be there. I'm saying it just he looks out of place. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying fire the guy. I'm just saying he's a white guy playing a black man's music.
So that's what you think jazz is?
That's what I know jazz is. That's what I know jazz is. It is black people's music that white people have been trying to break into.
Well, all right, now hold on. I'm not going to disagree with you necessarily, okay?
All right, we'll get, because I got a selection I want to play of one of the great, great African-American jazz artists.
What do you mean, on the phone?
No, I gave it to that retard. Is he there?
I got it right here.
Bud, I don't want you talking. You play the music when I tell you to.
All right.
And when I say hit the right button, I want to hit a button. If I hear that fun horn, if I hear the Laurel and Hardy theme, if I hear anything other than the jazz record this guy gave you to play, I swear to God, man, I'll hurt you, and I don't care if I go to jail.
Word.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But, Phil, so my I guess I'm feeling emotional today because I just feel silly, and I feel sad that I'll never be as cool as a black guy.
You know, you sound kind of dumb saying that.
Oh, thanks a lot. I'm pouring my heart out.
No, but what I'm saying is this. You're going to have to just be who you are and like what you like. You know, there's an old saying, there's nothing original in the world. The originality comes from reinterpreting what's already been.
What?
I said, there is a belief. There is an old standard thought that goes something like this. There is nothing truly original in the world. What the originality is you reinterpret what has already happened.
Come again?
Oh, cut it out, will you?
Look, will you just... Is the tard there, isn't he?
Right here.
All right, this is an example, Phil, I think, of one of the great black jazz singers. I don't want to give away his name, but you're going to recognize him. Cole Black, but... Well, not but. This is his music. This is an African-American singing his music.
All right, hit it, bud. What is that?
It's just a joke.
I told you not to screw around, didn't I? Didn't I?
Don't hurt me!
You hit him?
You bet I did.
All right, Phil, here is one of the great black singers singing jazz. And, can you hear me, Phil?
Yeah.
You'll notice, even though this guy is just as black as the inside of a cow, it doesn't mean anything. He's very, very dark. But, man, can he sing. Wait till you hear this guy's voice.
Can I...
Will you hold on for a minute, please?
I'd like to say...
Would you just please shut up, Phil? I don't mean to sound like Raj Fanin, but I'm trying to listen to this man. God, I love it.
Yeah, but you see...
Excuse me. I'm listening to a great black singer. And you talk about dark.
Don't you understand?
Please, Mr. Henry, have a little bit of decency. What were you saying?
That guy ain't black.
Is that Frank Sinatra?
Yes.
He's Italian, right?
Yeah.
Might as well be black.
Get out of here, will you? I thought you were
I'm telling you right now, this guy's an eggplant. And
Bug off with your eggplant. Guy had a good point, though, didn't he? Jazz, created by African Americans, very cool music, and no matter how cool white people get, we're never going to be quite cool enough, and it does make you want to cry. We'll be right back on the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back, 1-800-449-8686.
What the hell is this, man? I just saw this story. Don't blame the photographer is the name of this. Reuters explains photo of Bush bathroom note. Don't blame the photographer. That's the message from Gary Hirshhorn, a picture editor for Reuters, about the photo yesterday that shows President Bush writing an all-too-human note during a UN meeting. Bush is shown writing, "I think I may need a bathroom break. Is this possible?" The photo, which quickly became fodder for blogs and emails among friends, was taken by Rick Wilking, a contract photographer based in Denver. Hirshhorn, Reuters news editor for pictures for the Americas, says he's responsible for zooming in on the note and deciding to transmit the photo to Reuters clients. He says Wilking didn't know what the note said when he shot the picture. "I'm so adamant that Rick has nothing to do with this. He was just the guy who pushed the button," Hirshhorn says. In response to the attention the photo was getting, Reuters spokeswoman in London released a two-sentence statement about the picture. "The photographer and editors on this story were looking for other angles in their coverage of this event, something that went beyond the stock pictures of talking heads that these kinds of forums usually offer." And they should have added, "and the kinds of pictures that we usually deal in here at Reuters." Which, when was the last time we got a Pulitzer for any of our photographs? Thank you very much. So how did the picture happen? According to Hirshhorn, Wilking was one of several photographers covering a UN Security Council meeting. He was part of a pool stationed on a balcony that faced Bush's back. All right. Wilkins shot about 200 images and sent two memory cards to the press room at the UN where Hirshhorn was working. Hirshhorn looked at the images on a computer and initially decided not to send any of them. However, a few hours later, he started to wonder about a note that Bush was seen writing in three of the pictures. Out of curiosity, he zoomed in to see if he could read it. Once he saw what it said, Hirshhorn decided the note was interesting and worth publishing. The white parts of the picture were overexposed, so a Reuters processor used Photoshop to burn down the note. So if you zoom in on something that's set far enough away, it is going to get bleached out a little bit. So the guy uses Photoshop to burn down the note. This is a standard practice for news photos, and the picture was not manipulated in any way. Around 4:30, Reuters transmitted two versions of the photo, including one that was tightly cropped around the note and Bush's hand. The caption says that Bush was writing the note to Secretary of State Rice. Hirshhorn says Wilkins saw Bush write the note and hand the note to Rice. Hirshhorn says heads of state seldom attend Security Council meetings, and it's possible Bush was simply asking his Secretary of State what the proper protocol was to be excused. Online, some accused Reuters of the media in general being insulting or juvenile. A letter writer to editor and publisher wrote, "You ought to all be ashamed of yourselves for this stupid trivia and childish focus. It's unclear how widely the picture was published." I bet you someplace in America, though, someone is saying, see, the guy's going to the bathroom now. I mean, is there no end to the war crimes of this man? Is there no end to the horror that George Bush has visited on this nation? That now, in the middle of a hurricane disaster, and the aftermath of 9/11 and the war in Iraq, he thinks he has the right to go to the bathroom? What kind of an animal is he? Or something like that. It's definitely a Monty Python bit, ain't it? Can't you see John Cleese with the meat cleaver and the chef hat going, "You bastard!" All right, 1-800-449-868. We're just hanging out, baby. Tomorrow night's the webcast. And it's going to be a beautiful thing. Starts at 7 o'clock. Get your backstage pass right now at www.philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Now, our best of CD for 2005 is going to be called Are You For Real? And that will be available just as soon as we get that baby back from the printer. We actually are getting our artwork done now. Some people have offered, one guy writes and he says, "Hey, how about a contest and the best one win?" Come on. You can come up with one better than that, man. That's like those sports teams. What should we name the team? I don't know. Let's have a contest. And they come up with something really sexy like the Jaguars. You know, when the NFL added those two teams, Carolina and Jacksonville, when they announced the names of those teams, it was like, crap. I wanted something cool. The Panthers. Are there enough cats now? You know, Tigers, Panthers, Jaguars, Kittens, Minx, Lynx, Manx, Monk, Theolonius Monk, speaking of jazz. Monkeys. Why don't you just go ahead and call yourselves the Apes? Go ahead. I dare you. I double dare you. And by the way, if you can call a team the Vikings, why can't you call a team the Africans? I want to know. Bob, what do you think? I got to be honest. It's the Africans. What the hell are you talking about, man? The team's in Fargo, North Dakota. But they're all black guys. We got a white quarterback. Oh, well, gee whiz. There's a shock and a half. Might even have a white whiteout, too, huh? Yeah, we just got Ed McCaffrey. Great. Freaking old man. We're calling them the Africans. In Fargo? The Fargo Africans, yes. They got the Vikings over there. Oh, you're going to start to cry now, huh? The Minnesota Vikings, when's the last time you saw a black Viking, okay? And I ain't talking about a motorcycle club. Other than the fact that maybe a couple of them took some slaves when they sailed on down that way back in the day. Now, we're going to start naming these teams that are going to make sense, man. The Africans. Yeah, but people think it's racist? What are you talking about, man? These guys are black. You got the Fighting Irish, don't you? Well, yeah, huh? You got more freaking African-American players in this freaking country who got to go by the name of the Fighting Irish. Here's some black guy running around there with green pants.
Always after me lucky charm.
No. Leroy, what I'm telling you is, you got to get We're dude, we are doing this commercial here for Notre Dame, okay? Now, what are you doing?
What is, I don't know what this is.
It's a shillelagh, okay? Now, put the little turned-up shoes. There you go. That's it. Now, put the little funny hat on. All right, now, go ahead.
Rolling. Always after me lucky charm.
Charms-a. Do it again.
Sound speed. Rolling. Hi, I play for the Fighting Irish. Always after lucky charm.
What are you, Barry White all of a sudden? Come on, baby.
I'm not going to do this anymore, man. I'm not a damn Irishman, okay? I play football, but I ain't going to put... Get me out of the damn shillelagh on the leprechaun wear. I want to get on a team, and it's going to be called the... I don't know. How about the Blues Brothers?
Something, man. All right. Football this weekend. Who the Jets playing?
Miami.
And is Pennington still out? You know what Pennington needs to do? Just step up into the pocket and throw that ball like a freaking man and quit protecting himself. That's why he's getting hurt. When you try to protect yourself, you get hurt. The Jets will be okay. Dolphins will be fine. Raiders suck. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.